Hey everyone, welcome to the Foches Show, starring King of UVA Basketball Twitter, Phony Bennett. We've got the producer and CEO, T-Dubs. We've got Dougie Fresh joining us a little bit later. I'm Mark Jerome, and another special guest, Chris Havlicek.
Second welcome appearance. Everybody. Yeah.
Phony, what's the good word?
Man, it's been a tough week, man. Twitter's down right now, I think. I can't tweet, and which makes me question my own existence. I got an MRI on my knee this week because I think I'm going to need to have it scoped again. And yeah, it's just great. But basketball practice started, so that's positive. We're going to talk about that today, Tito?
We are.
So we'll talk about that later. But so that's the silver lining in all this. We got basketball practice, and we got some good news on the football front. I don't know what T-Dub has lined up, so.
We got a little bit on them.
Do we have Ronnie Walker?
We no update on Ronnie Walker, I don't think.
Okay.
I don't know. I'm assuming no. I stopped checking.
No, they announced yesterday that he's eligible.
Oh, he is? Okay. Yeah, I gave up
on it. He'll be eligible this week. Yeah, so we can talk about that because that's not on your list. But, yeah, that's good news for our running game, which hasn't been as strong as we would have hoped. So. But no, I'm happy. I'm happy to be here with you guys. Happy Chris joined us again, a repeat guest. We don't have too many of those. Normally they don't take our calls afterwards. So thank you, Chris.
Happy to be here, man. Let's talk UVA.
Yeah, it's been a week off. Feels like I haven't talked to you guys in a while.
I know.
Feels like ages. All right, let's jump into it. I'll share. The first one. This is all winter athletes in the NCAA D1 sports will be given additional year of eligibility. We've all chatted about this on text. What do you guys, what is your take on this? Chris, you've done some research too, right?
Yeah. So I think it's really interesting, and I'm not sure that we really will understand the ramifications of it in the near term. I think it will be, it'll become more evident, but you know, my first impression of this is that this is not going to affect, you know, the superstar freshman coming in who's going to play a year or two and go to the NBA. So this is not for a DeAndre Hunter. This is not for a Zion Williamson. Where I think this will manifest itself really is in, kind of two areas. The first is, you know, large contributing seniors. So seniors who, you know, maybe our second team, all Big Ten, really good players. They're not going to be drafted. They're probably going to go play in Europe. They have a chance to come back. And schools are going to have to figure out during the required time period, and that's still unclear when that window is, if they want to invite that senior back to play. You know, I think back to like a Butler, you know, when Brad Stevens was coaching with Gordon Hayward, senior-led team. If that was in effect today, those kids would all come back and they'd probably make another Final Four run. The other place it's going to manifest itself really is with, you know, the recruiting. And do you take a fifth-year senior who, you know, helped you out a little bit, or do you take the star freshman? I don't know the ramifications yet, but it's going to be a very difficult decision for schools and for coaches as they move forward.
Or do they lift the scholarship, or do they raise the scholarship limits too, so it doesn't affect anyone? I don't know.
Yeah,
that's,
you know,
on the table.
We'll have to see what comes out. What I know is that, you know, it's going to make things more difficult for schools, and they're really going to have to look at recruiting and who they bring in. It's the difference between bringing in three freshmen and one or two freshmen. Right. So recruiting will play an enormous role. And, you know, Doug's not on yet, but before we started the show, we were talking. He's a perfect example. Doug, you know, was a good contributor as a junior and a major contributor as a senior. Would he have come back for another year if this had happened back then?
And run the show, right?
He certainly would have been incredibly valuable, and I think he would have.
What are your thoughts?
They've announced what at the same time that the everyone can transfer once without sitting out.
Right.
Those two things combined, are we going to see some kids that built themselves, you know, maybe went to like not a top Power Five school, but or P6, whatever. But you know, one of those decent schools built themselves into a good basketball player. Are you going to see any teams like Duke and Kentucky basically taking them as one and dones when you've got someone who's ready to get showcased like that? I don't think we're going to see it widely used because unless they raise the scholarship cap, it messes up that entire pipeline. And then on the flip side, if they do change the scholarship cap, then it's that much more money that schools have to expend. So I think you're going to see them be very strategic about it, but it'll be a fun thing to watch for sure.
And let's translate that for UVA to Mark. Sam Hauser, Jay Huff. Are we going to get another year of them? What's your guess?
No, is my guess. Jay's been there for 5 years, so I can't see him doing a sixth. Sam, I would probably say no as well, because he would be doing a 6 year too. He redshirted.
Right.
But I think it does get confusing. I heard from one coach today, one college coach, I think it's the AAC, without telling you in a second which conference it is, that he and other schools, I'm sorry, American East, are not going to offer people in 2021 class.
Wow.
Right. It's going to be confusing. And the other issue for me, it hits home, is because of my child, my younger son, right. Kobe, who's going to be into his freshman year. I'm just on the phone with his coach today, back and forth about it. And we're going to have a long conversation this evening or tomorrow. How does it impact incoming freshmen? And is there going to be a bottleneck, or are guys going to be, you know, redshirting freshmen, right? Which could easily happen. And what happens if there's not opportunities, there's no space, right?
It really opens up kind of a third category. You've got kids that redshirt because they're not ready. Mm-hmm. You've got medical redshirts because kids get injured. And those have been traditionally the two ways that people have gained an extra year of eligibility. Now you have this third one, and I don't know how it will manifest, but I do know that Coach Calipari will figure out a way to manipulate it and eventually take advantage of it.
Well, let me say something on that.
He doesn't want guys there more than a year, though.
I was going to say, his guys are out after a year or two anyway. It's rare that he's got a guy there for 3 years. So he's not, but you know who might? Patino might. That's who might, right up in New York. He's all of a sudden going to have a top 50 program.
Yeah, Patino could make a team out of seniors that the other schools say you're done, but they're not NBA prospects, but they're guys that could be showcased. Could you imagine the kind of monster squad he could build?
Well, that's interesting. I don't know the answer to this, and I think we'll find it out. But if schools choose not to renew you for your final year, or your, we'll call it the COVID year, are they eligible to then go into transfer portal, or do they have to go? I mean, these are things that are going to get worked out, and someone will benefit and someone will take advantage, and it'll be interesting.
The UVA connection also is like what happens with Trey Murphy. Why not Trey Murphy play this year?
Yeah, he should. He gets a free year, right? Why sit it out?
It's a free year. And he's,
I don't think they applied for eligibility for him, did they?
They don't have to now. They waived it.
Is that effective this season?
Yeah,
it's probably just for this year. It's a one-time waiver, free waiver.
So he might as well use it.
Right.
And I hear he can play, right? I hear he can play.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's going to be probably a little crowded for him, but you know what? If you know, there's always time, minutes to be earned.
And from what I hear, he is really,
he's
really
awesome. Really everyone's saying he's legit.
Yeah. He could be, he may have the most talent on the team, is what people are saying. Wow.
And that also means we get an extra year development for someone like Kihei, who, you know, has basically two more years instead of the one, right? Which is,
can you imagine Kihei has a fifth year?
I know.
But is that a decision that Tony's going to have to make now? Because I mean, that affects your recruiting and guys that are coming in
looking for minutes and
stuff. Well, I think that's why the American East is saying that they're not going to offer any scholarships for 2021.
Right. Wow. New? You mean like freshmen?
Yeah, and right. They're not going to recruit this year. They're not going to. Right. They're going to wait till.
They're going to just skip this entire season. Yeah, because I imagine smaller schools have a tighter budget can't afford to just have extra scholarships given out. Like,
right.
It's not, if you're not Power Five, this has got to be tough for you, right? No fans, plus scheduling is hard. And now this, like, wow, that's a lot to deal with.
Right. And for a team like that, their seniors are probably their best players. And and that's right. The difference, you know, versus the top teams, their seniors aren't their best players.
Right. That's a great point.
The mid majors
will benefit the most by this because they'll, like you said, they don't have kids that leave after a year. They'll have all 50-year senior starting, or maybe even a sixth-year type of player starting. And I think you'll see in the tournament, hopefully we have it. I think we will. I think you'll see a big mid-major run this year.
Are we going to see a seventh-year player? Because, right, you get 4 years to play, a redshirt year, a medical redshirt, and then you're
free. Yeah, I mean, it could happen. But I do remember Chris Winkie at Florida State was like 27 years old when he won the Heisman.
That's right.
So, you know, maybe we get a military person to come back, and I'd be rooting for him if they did and get to play. That'd be cool.
That would be cool.
And then we'll move on to our next topic. Happy birthday to Scott Stadium. On this day, 1931. Virginia hosted VMI in the first ever game. This is straight from UVA football. If you look at the photo, it's just a hill. There's no stands. It's like incredible how the development over the last 4 years.
Right. So it's just all, they just graded the ground and put bleachers on. Wow. I mean, I was amazed after I graduated because, I mean, Chris, you and I were there at the same time. You know, all the expansion and stuff they did, like the night, it was several years before I was back, and it was like, holy crap, it feels like a much more legit stadium than it did even when I was there.
No, it does, and I'm thinking back to my memories of kind of Scott Stadium, and we were always big supporters of the football team. Coach had us at the tailgate with the late, great Suzanne Haney. Rest in peace, Suzanne, who was a great benefactor of the Virginia basketball team. We had a lot of fun there, but it was a relatively pedestrian stadium when we were there. And now I think it is much more in line with kind of the SEC and the bigger schools in the country in terms of the facilities, the practice facilities. So they're in good shape. And, you know, just like all of us, Scott Stadium has aged, and they're better now than they were when they were young. So congrats to Scott Stadium. Happy birthday.
And then the next one. The uniform scheme for Saturday is in white helmets, white unis. So what are your thoughts on the what are your thoughts on the season so far? Tough game last
year. And the team seemed as surprised by their performance as the rest of us, because the first two games, I mean, even, you know, Clemson is just that good, and so right. I didn't really have any problem with what happened that game, but man, they just did not look ready at really any part of the game. It was difficult to watch, and of course it didn't help that Armstrong got knocked out. I thought Stone did a great job in relief. And if he's got to start this week, I think, you know, our chances with him are still good, but there's a lot of stuff they need to fix. You know, the thing you mentioned, the running game, we've got Ronnie Walker back this week. They seem to forget about the running game time to time, and especially with Stone back there, as much of a threat with his league himself, that seems like an even bigger issue.
Yeah, he looks like a running back more than a quarterback. I see him out there.
I believe it's 0-2-4, somebody told me.
How much are you cut out?
I believe it's 6.0 or 6'0" and 240 pounds.
Wow. Which, it's a big guy.
It's a weird build for a quarterback.
Big dude.
Yeah, but he may work. Yeah, short yardage, like him on.
and the next one, shout out, Ball Hawk is talking to Chris Canty on the fourth side. If you haven't checked that out, check it out. Fourth side with Ahmad Hawkins. And then the next one is what we talked about earlier. It's back. First practice. EV Men's Hoops tweeted out this little I don't even know, GIF with Jay Huff turning into a fire something. I don't know.
I think that's a Dragon Ball Z thing. It's like a Dragon Ball Z power-up thing, I believe.
A what?
A video game reference?
Dragon Ball Z. It's like it's a Japanese cartoon of some sort. I don't know if it's technically anime. That's not my area of specialty, but I think there have been Dragon Ball Z video games too. It's some kind of like fighting comic or so. I don't know.
It probably resonates with some part of our demographic, but I'll just tell you, October 15th is a day, you know, I remember every year when I played, that was the start of the season. I know they've kind of vacillated back between early November and starting a little bit earlier, but we were 4 years of October 15th. It's a great day. You're official. You're not just playing scrimmages. You are practicing with your team. Your coaches are there. Your managers are there. It's really the kickoff to, you know, what is going to be a long season. So it's a special day, and I'm excited for this year.
Midnight Madness, right? You guys had a couple of Midnight Madness runs. It wasn't every year.
We had legendary. We had legendary Midnight Madnesses with Woody Harrelson and Bruce Hornsby. And we always kicked off with a scrimmage at midnight. It was
so cool.
Was so cool. And the other thing I remember about it is, you know, you play hard in the off season, and we played hard at Slaughter and at Mem Gym and at U-Haul, and we lifted and we ran. But the minute that you start practice, you start using some different muscles. You play hard defense. So you are, I just remember being really sore on the 16th, 17th, and 18th of October every year, because it's a different level of intensity. You can approximate it in the off season, but you can never fully, you know, emulate what's going to happen once practice starts. And it's exciting. I'm happy. Go Hoos.
That is exciting.
Yeah, I loved the energy of going to Midnight Madness, and I really wish that's something that we would do. I mean, I get it, the blue and white scrimmage sponsored by Pepsi and all that, which is fine. I mean, I take, you know, any kind of, you know, content we can get. I mean, fans are clamoring for practice videos right now, but something about that kickoff, like, gets everyone just pumped up for the energy of the start of the season. As a fan, it's something I definitely miss.
Well, we played, you know, it was Midnight Madness, Orange Blue, and that was exciting. But what was more exciting was the after party with Bruce Hornsby and Woody Harrelson, who
I heard some stories at the time about Woody.
Woody was he was an aggressive human being on and off the court. I'll just say that.
Was he your coach, or was Bruce?
We also had Mike Fratello 1 year. He must have been in between NBA gigs, but he was a coach 1 year for us. We had a nice kind of potpourri of guys that were fun, and we would always have a big party afterwards. And Bruce was, you know, a rock star. And, you know, that's where I first learned the phrase "party like a rock star," because he did. And Woody was special, and probably still is. And I'd love to reconnect with him at some point.
That's amazing. Yeah, that's definitely not done anywhere now, right? Midnight Madness is no longer a thing, because I think they just totally stopped the midnight thing, because now I think it's at 2 p.m. or something is the official start time.
Yeah, and they changed, like, it was a certain day of the week that it started. Now it's 42 days before your first game or something. And,
yeah, it's not the same. They took the fun out of it. Remember they used to, like, roll out, like, Roy Williams came out in a motorcycle or something ridiculous, and those huge fireworks.
It got big. But there's a decent chance that Woody Harrelson is at the Pi-Fi house at UVA right now. So someone needs to go check on them. It's 50-50 if he's there or not.
So I was going to bring it back to the COVID thing for the team. Did I read correctly? If there is one positive test on the team or staff, then I think everyone stops for 14 days. Have you heard that? Until you get two negatives. I think that's the NCAA rule. Wow. So basically, if we get one positive, and the wrong time of the season, like for 2 weeks, your games are postponed. That's
wow.
Probably that's crazy. Like that's,
so
that's
I, like six I have games. A question. Mm-hmm. I have a question. Is there, and you guys might know, I don't know. Is there any kind of a self-imposed bubble at UVA where they're living in a, you know, we used to live in the Cavalier Inn during our Christmas break for about 3 weeks, which is nothing to be proud of, but we were definitely contained and, you know, just not out and about. Is there any plans for that?
I haven't heard about anything like that. I mean, I think they're given pretty strict marching orders, and given how Tony is in the end and the kind of guys that he has on his team, I would expect discipline not to be a problem with it. But I haven't heard about like actually bubbling them or housing them elsewhere.
I think they have. I mean, I think each of them, if they leave campus, then they have to self quarantine or something like
that. It's grounds teed up. Mark, can you ding him?
I like campus.
He was making me feel better by saying that.
I always say campus
5,000 times.
I rarely say grounds. I always say campus. Yeah, something like that. If they leave and come back, then they have to self quarantine 14 days. Or something like that. So I think that's their way of policing it, saying, hey, you can leave, but if you leave, you got to sit out.
Right.
Okay.
So the guys aren't leaving, obviously.
Yeah.
And anyone around the program is the same way, right? If somebody decides to take a trip when they come back, if they want to go home and visit family, they come back 2 weeks, they're quarantined.
But speaking of the bubble, Chris, can I just say that the NBA did something that really seems amazing under the circumstances with putting that whole bubble thing together. I mean, when you think about the logistics, the behind the scenes to organizing, you know, just rooms, food, testing, I mean, just everything that it took to put that together on absolutely no notice. I mean, just incredible job to people whose names will never know. And yeah, it was a great championship and you know, good job LeBron and all that, but all those people working behind the scenes, that's really impressive to pull that off.
Yeah, no, I mean, I was talking to someone earlier and I said that the MVP of the NBA this year is the COO. Whoever put that together.
Right. Yeah.
And, you know, the elaborate plans, the protection, the food, the transportation, you know, it's an asterisk on the championship because it should be, and it's COVID year and we'll remember it like it was the year of, you know, Pearl Harbor or whatever. People will recognize it. But operationally, what they did was world class. It was, I think, the best job of any major sports league.
Yeah.
And I think what the players don't get enough credit for is the discipline of saying, hey, we're not going to breach this. We're not going out. We're gonna play ball and eat. That's basically what they did. Play ball, eat, get treatment, and sleep. And, you know, if you're a grown man and you have kids and family and wives and people you want to see, it's pretty remarkable what they were able to pull off. I know, you know, I don't pay any attention to – kind of the ratings, which were not great. I think the ratings, if they rated things on operations, they would have been through the roof. And, you know, big hats off to Adam Silver and my friends at the NBA. I used to work there. They did an incredible job. And, you know, I'm hoping people, you know, can take parts of what they did and implement that into, you know, whether it be college sports or pro sports. But I know right now football is having a tough time. And, I hope they get that straightened out because the fall means football, and I'm missing part of that.
Habs, just to be clear, you're not disgruntled about the NBA championship because the Celtics didn't make it.
That's like only 80%. That's only – I mean, if there was ever a year where the world needed Celtics-Lakers, it was this year. You know, the Heat,
that would have been
give them credit. They battled. They fought hard, gritty, tough, all that, but – I miss the Celtics-Lakers final for sure. And now the Lakers are tied with the Celtics.
Right, another.
So, you know, maybe next year we'll have a real finals with the Celtics and Lakers. So,
well, no home court advantage is like a real thing, right? Like that.
So who – T-Dubs, I'm glad you brought that up. Who does that give the advantage to? with no home court? Like, does that add wear and tear and to somebody who's older, to the teams with older players? Does that make it less stressful to the younger players who may not be used to playing in a crazy environment?
Yeah, like the Mark, championship? You nailed it. I think there's two people that benefited from this. In what we all agree is sort of the least physically taxing finals ever, right? There was no travel and there was no home court advantage. Can you imagine Anthony Davis, who had heel and foot issues, if he's hopping on a 6-hour flight to Miami? You know, it's just different. So I think the veterans benefited the veterans and the injured players benefited. But I also think the young guys benefited. A kid like Tyler Herro, who had an incredible series against Boston and a really good series against LA. You know, do I think Tyler Herro is going into the Boston Garden and dropping 37 at the Garden in the playoffs with all those people screaming and yelling? Probably not. It's probably easier to take a deep three in an empty gym than in a, you know, adverse environment. So, you know, it's definitely different, but overall, operationally, again, great job. They did the best they could, and hats off to the Lakers for winning another one.
Well, I know we've talked about this before, but the other big thing with the neutral site, no fans, is no home court advantage.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say.
and you know, we've talked about this. I think the refs are more affected in basketball than in football by the home team. And I mean, that's huge, especially when you've got a home arena that gives you such an advantage, you know, where you've got those loud fans that are going to get on those officials from the tip. Yeah. You know, that's a difference. Now, certainly I think the argument there is this makes it more fair, more equitable somehow, but still it's weird watching a game without fans.
Yeah.
You can't fully measure the impact of 16,000 drunk Irishmen in Boston screaming at Lakers or Heat people. So, and I know it goes the other way as well, but good point.
I would have guessed someone like Denver also, especially with their Utah, one of those with high elevation, being a higher seed, if they had home court, it would definitely hurt them, but.
Oh, sure, yeah.
Maybe it just evens out at the end of the day. I don't know.
What's up, yeah, fresh? I mean, that's going to be a curiosity with college this year if the teams are playing without fans. I mean, what's Cameron going to be like? It'll be really interesting to see if there's a statistically significant change in Duke's winning percentage at home, and obviously your different lineups and stuff. It's going to be hard to draw broad conclusions from it. But, I mean, if I'm a player, part of it I might say I think I would like the excitement. I mean, Cameron has got to be an incredible place to play. Yes. I've watched a game there. It's pretty awesome. And you know, and I think a lot of players, you want that experience of the fans yelling at you and all that, but it might be a little bit easier if it's empty and you don't have those guys right on you that are on the refs the whole time. So that'll be interesting.
Yeah. One thing. Oh, go ahead, Mark.
No, I was saying we have two guys with us that played at Cameron. So,
yeah, what I was going to say is, you know, what I think, and I know you watch it on a lot of our fans watch it on TV and some have attended in person. What's remarkable about playing in Cameron is the choreography that the student section has around the games. They have, you know, when you're introduced, when they say, you know, starting at guard, a 6'5", you know, sophomore from New York, Ty Jerome, the entire crowd at the same time says, "Hi, Ty." They've got five or six different things that they do. When people foul, they do their hand gestures. It is an incredible choreography around how to behave as a fan. And I'm sure the freshmen, they've got to learn it. And by the time they're a senior, they're teaching the other fans. The other thing I'll say, it's the only place I ever played, and I remember taking a free throw, and the fans in the end zone, if you will, behind the baskets and on the side, they're all jumping. Okay, that is a suspended floor. That floor, when you are shooting, you are moving, and that doesn't happen. It doesn't happen at any other arena. Your eyes are going up and down as you shoot, and it's a real You know, that's a real home court advantage.
Right.
So, you know, I'd say, you know, the Dean Dome is beautiful. You play there, it's like playing in a theater. You know, NC State's got a great, they're all great atmosphere, but playing at Cameron Indoor with how close everyone is and the choreography, it is really unique, not only in the ACC, but in the country.
I don't think the crazies are as good now as they were in your day, though, Chris. I've seen their cheer sheets. I think, you know, something that iconic, eventually, unfortunately, you kind of become a caricature of yourself. Yeah. And I don't think it's authentic. I don't think it's organic. And the cheer sheets are just embarrassing. It's sad because they were the most powerful force in fans, certainly back then. But it just doesn't seem the same now.
No doubt. And I'll tell a quick story. So for whatever reason, the Cameron Crazies decided they were going to target me one year. So the second I walked out of the tunnel, they started cheering. And then every time I took a shot, this is warmups, this is an hour and a half before the game. If I made it, they cheered and went crazy. If I missed it, there was an audible, gesture and a huge sigh, and they were very disappointed in me. And like, it would go on for 20 or 30 minutes. I go in, it rattled me the first time I went in. I got some Gatorade, came back out, same thing. So they were really unique, really inventive, yeah. And creative. And maybe it's gone mainstream now, and they franchised their concept. But wow, what a fun place to play. And we did beat them. My Doug's fourth year and my third year, we beat them at Cameron. That's one of the highlights of my career.
Has to be.
Me too.
According to two managers on the Duke team, one who's recently graduated and one who's a senior this year, who I know their family really well, they violate this fire safety code every game. They let extra people in. They let excess of whatever the capacity crowd is because they don't click the turnstile when people go through intentionally.
Wow.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, I got to say, there's nothing more important to me than the fire safety code. And,
they're going to be hearing from you.
If I had known that, I would have protested vigorously about the code. But yeah, that place is packed. Let's hope there's never a fire there, because it's a crowded, fun place to play.
I think what's changed, to you guys' point, so by our fourth year, your red shirt third year,
yep.
Our fourth year, we went out and thanks to Jason Williford, Corey, June, like, let's just have fun with this thing.
Yeah.
Like, who cares if they're making fun that you have a zit on your cheek, or who cares they're booing you, whatever. Like, we played up to it. We're doing the cheers with them. We're like raising our arms. That was a blast, man. Huge highlight.
Great place.
And then really Junior banked in a three.
Oh, he did bank a three in. Right. Amazing. I remember that.
And then here's the next one. Have you guys seen this? This is Rick Carlisle dancing on TikTok.
Is that with his daughter?
Yeah.
Well,
the things we do for our daughters.
That's great, huh?
I have two daughters.
I never thought I'd see that.
I think that's cool. You got to do what you got to do for your daughters. I have a lot of embarrassing TikToks that hopefully never see the light of day.
We're going to find them.
Yeah. I've got a few. You guys have actually seen one. It's mostly me scowling at the lyrics of the songs that
with some questionable lyrics.
Yeah, quite questionable.
Have you seen Chris's TikTok? He's in the car and he's like, wait, what did they just say? He's singing a rap song, like, wait, what are they saying?
He's
so clueless.
And experience like, being on a TikTok.
My daughter has no chance at TikTok. No way.
I don't get it. I don't really get it, but it's very popular in my family, and my job now is just to stay out of the background.
Yeah.
And not interfere.
I mean, when I'm out here in the public, I see people practicing their TikToks, like not just like once or twice, constantly. If I'm at Target or grocery store, I see like people practicing it. It's just so bizarre. Just like
I will interject. If there was TikTok in 1990, Chris Havlicek and Sean Wilson would have been 45 million followers.
We resorted to using like camcorders to film our own stuff, and it just wasn't the same. But we were a little bit before the time we should have been.
Well, remember when we did the coaches show?
Yeah.
And what was the theme? I forgot, but it was hilarious. We did it in the shitter on the low lane. And
well, TP. We did several videos.
No, that was the name of our house, Mark. But it was, I wish we had that still.
We did several videos, none of which are appropriate or should ever be viewed by anyone outside of that era. Because,
right.
If you put the lenses of today on those videos, they were massively out of bounds. And, but at the time, pretty funny and pretty creative.
Right. See, Fresh, you're lamenting that we didn't have that when we were that age. I am so happy that not everyone was carrying around a camera and a video recorder everywhere they went, because we all took part in activities and man, I mean,
sneaking out. I mean, I was on the varsity sneak out team. And like that would be impossible now. I mean, I was an all ACC sneak outerer, and if video cameras existed, you know, it would have been
but you wouldn't have done it if video cameras existed the way they do today. You'd probably be less, you would have found a different way, you would have found something else to do then.
Yeah, what were your methods?
The only person that would have felt the pain more than me, Jeff Jones. So I had to go there.
It's true. You'd have been covered. Well, see, both of you guys would have had to change your habits in today's environment. So
I will say we were in Milwaukee, Wisconsin, playing Marquette, and it was I think the 1991 New Year's Eve.
Yeah,
and our coaches were cool. JJ was like, "All right, guys, be home by 1 a.m." We're like, "Yeah, I got it. See you at 1 a.m." We're staying in some fly hotel. We had a huge night in Milwaukee, just running, you know, you go to some place and there's karate, you go somewhere else, there's Turner. Nobody was home at one. And we had a great practice the next day, by the way.
Yeah, that was when I was introduced to Qantas Airlines and their stewardesses.
That's right.
Who knew? I didn't know that airline existed, but I also remember it was the coldest, you know, being from Boston, it was the coldest I'd ever been that night. I think it was like minus 40 with wind chill, and but that was one of our better New Year's, Doug. Usually we were just sitting at the Cavalier Inn eating some baked ziti.
Yeah, you know what we used to do, actually. I used to babysit Dennis Wolf's kids every New Year. What a hustle he had on me, right? He couldn't pay me. I ate like some Cheerios out of his
pantry. Would you do it then, Dougie?
I'm a good dude, Marky. I like kids.
No, no, really. I'm kidding.
I'm boring, yo. No, he was Dennis was the best. And he had three unbelievable little kids. And I don't know, I had nothing else to do. No students were around. I couldn't do anything, so.
Yeah, we had nothing going on at New Year's. That's
Dougie,
for sure.
You know, anytime you want to come over.
Oh, I got you, bro. I'm a great babysitter. You buy the six pack. I'll take care of it.
That makes a lot of sense.
That little monster.
Hey, Fresh. Fresh, before you hopped on, we were talking about the season and, you know, the meaning of October 15th. They kicked off practice today, and that's always a special day for anyone who played college basketball. What are your kind of recollections of the start of the season and you know, what you remember about...
No, it's fun. I'll tell you what my main recollection is. I would come in unbelievable shape every time. Like, I was that guy. I was always in shape, blah, blah, blah. And the next day and the entire 2 weeks, I was hurting everywhere.
It's what I said. It's exactly what I said. The soreness.
Right? Exactly.
And we were in shape. Like, it wasn't like a shock to our bodies. But why did that shit hurt so much?
Yeah, because I think you played like, you know, you did like defensive slides, and it's just right. different. And what I different. Said was the same thing. We played all summer. We played all fall. Practice would start. You'd be so sore.
Oh, brutal. It's probably counterproductive.
I remember how physical you guys were then just playing. Yeah, were your practices more physical?
Well, Anthony Oliver actually just – I'm sitting in my car in Florida. I think he just fouled me again. he fouls me about every hour and a half right now. But, no, there was – yeah, that was, you know, different than Tony's pack line, but it was a very physical practice on all fronts. And guys would bang, and there was no fouls. And, you know, that's how we did it.
No, there was no fouls. I'll tell you a story because Terry Kirby's what's the name of the podcast? Sorry. The Lockdown. I listened to today, and he told the story on Jay Willie and today about him playing basketball and being a defensive guy.
Right.
And we used to have a drill. Mark, you'll like this. You'd pass the ball to the wing as a point guard, and your job was to go down and set a screen at the lower block. And Terry Kirby's guarding me. And guess what? Terry's not letting me go where I want to go. And Jeff Jones is screaming, fucking Fresh, you can't go set the screen. I'm like, JJ, it's an all-American tailback. You run through this motherfucker. No chance. And Kirby liked that. He kind of liked toying with us. And has
he did, man.
There too. He did.
Yeah, same drill. I'll tell my story. Same drill. I was, you know, Kirby would come back, and he was so talented. He hadn't played basketball, but he was just so physically talented. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I remember that one game, we've talked about it before, when he scored 17 points in 7 minutes at NC State. That was sort of par for the course, but he came back the next year. You know, every year I would hold a seance around, you know, the end of September, hoping he would pledge full time to football. But he came back sophomore year, and I'm ready to go at him. And I'm, you know, so we have a couple bumps, and I, you know, decided, all right, I'm really going to go after him, which was such a poor decision in retrospect. But, you know, I've been lifting in the offseason. So I rammed into him, and we squared up. He picked me up like a chapstick, literally, and threw me on the ground. And it was the most, like, man strength I had ever felt in my life. He was fresh out of football. And I was like, yo, that is a different level dude.
Well, he was also 25 years old at the time, and you were 20. So
yeah, that's true. That is true. What a specimen! What a great athlete! You know, there's not a lot of guys you can point to and say this guy could have been a pro athlete in three sports.
Right.
And he was. He was drafted in baseball. He talked about that. Yep. Obviously, played pro football.
Yep.
Yeah. And then here's what a lot of people don't know too. He was a ridiculous cyclist, which he did like in the off season for like fun, where he'd ride and they had the like, the Tour de France, they had like the Tour of Virginia. He would ride in that as a,
I forgot about that.
Yeah.
Like he would ride workout. In
that as like a civilian for a workout and like come in like second.
Right.
I mean, just an unbelievable athlete. And
he was literally
Bo Jackson-esque.
Yeah,
TW or Hav, do you remember the dunk he had at U-Haul?
Yes.
It was a nondescript game. It wasn't a big-time game. It was one of the greatest dunks I've ever seen.
Head at the rim. Out of nowhere, in traffic.
Like, on accident. Damn. Like, oh, yeah. I'm going to do this. Let's go.
No, you say that. Bo Jackson of Virginia, we had the picture, the Nike poster of Bo Jackson with the pads, and he had – you remember that? The Bo Nose ad. We put Terry Kirby in my house. We put Terry Kirby's head on that because we were like, he's our Bo Jackson. So we took that same thing, which is like had whatever. It was a basketball and a football, soccer ball on the ground, whatever. It had all the sports, and then we stuck Terry Kirby's head on it.
And not to overly jock Kirby on this, but I will. He was so businesslike about his sports stuff.
Like we'd
go to the weight room and he'd be doing stuff. I'm like, oh, I'll try that, and like I'd like pull my back out, whatever. But he was so he's such a hard worker. as you said.
Hard worker. He really, the other thing that I remember about Kirby, is, you know, Doug, you nailed it. He was really just sort of disciplined and forward thinking about fitness and what he did. He was the first guy I ever saw. I remember looking out at the fields and he was running with like one of those mini parachutes behind him. And that was at the time totally wild and wacky. Like now I can come to the fields, you know, in my town and there's a kid running with, you know, a mini parachute behind him. But Kirby was running and doing this in like 1990. That's right. And was, you know, the first guy I ever saw do that. And it showed, look, he looked good in his uniform.
No doubt.
And the next video I have here, state championship 1987 at U-Haul, Brian Stith posting his highlights. This pretty cool.
I didn't see this.
I've never seen it either. How do I make it bigger? There we go.
I'll send it to you guys afterwards. It's pretty incredible.
This is him in high school?
Yeah, that was in the state title. And then we go to Kihei and the game winner against Virginia Tech. But I'll send you that Brian Stith highlight. He just posted it today.
That's cool.
If you guys are following him,
I didn't see it.
He's a good follow. Yeah.
That's cool.
And then the last
– Have you seen Brian's his post doing his valedictorian speech in high school?
No, but I gotta see that.
Do your rendition of how you think Brian Stith did his high school valedictorian speech. It was incredible.
I know one thing. He was dressed to the nines, right?
Yep. But the diction of his voice, it's unbelievable.
He's unique, man. And I know B. Stith did a great job and made his classmates in school proud, but I know I'm really more interested in seeing the suit and all the accessories. Like, did he have the man purse with him? You remember he was a man purse guy.
he's the original. Nobody was before Be Nice.
He had the man attaché case with him, and it matched, and everything was ironed, and he was always sharply dressed and looked good.
Great purple suit.
And I have one last, you know, this is, we're doing trending. We generally do UVA basketball trending, Twitter trending, whatever, Instagram. I have one I just wanted to get your reaction on. This is a YouTube number one video this week. This is Logan Paul opening a $200,000 box of Pokemon playing cards.
Oh my God.
It had 10 million people watch it live. What are your reactions to all of this stuff? That's a lot to drop on someone.
The whole, I mean, you get into streamers and then you get into this, and I guess Logan Thomas is what an influence.
Logan Paul.
Yeah, he's a tight end. This is the kind of thing that just makes me feel old as shit because I watch it and I don't get it at all. Like, why do I want to watch somebody open? I'm fine, you know, and I'm getting to that age where my kids' music sounds like crap and I don't understand the trends they're following. Their dances are weird. It's all, I'm officially over the hill. I'm sorry.
Logan Thomas Paul sums it up. that sums it up, Chris. Great.
I mean, I want to take a different stance on this. I think it's so unbelievable that how many people watched it, T-Dub?
10 million
people watched this guy open up a pack of cards.
A box. I think it's like 10 or 20.
The population of Tennessee, for the record.
A box of cards. Playing cards. You know, Pokemon, whatever. I think that's so incredible that it gives me a lot of hope for locker room access that we will one day have an episode where over 10 million people tune in to hear T-Dub, Mark, Fresh, and Phony, and myself chime in about
Pokemon cards.
About anything, man. That's
not going to be this episode, Chris.
Yeah, I mean, we gotta get we gotta grow a little bit before we get to 10 mil, but we're on our way, boys.
And he raised a total of 131,000. I mean, I watched it. It was cool.
You were one of the 10 million?
I was one of the 10 million. I have no idea what Pokemon it is. I was trying to just figure out what it is.
Did he get a Pikachu or a...
He got a Pikachu, and the one that everyone wants is Charizard.
I was going to say, that's the only other Pokemon I know the name of. Charizard.
Yeah, that's sold for $250,000, the one card. It's crazy. It's all of it made no sense, but I went down this rabbit hole of like, what is, I got to figure this out.
That's how it works. You're right.
So then I just went down and just.
I hate that. I'm just wasting my time working a day job when I could have been.
Pokemon master.
The good news is for the guy that bought the Charizard card, that now he knows what rock bottom is, and the rest of his life he'll be trending upward. Because if you paid $250 for Charizard, that is rock bottom, Mr. Buyer. I'm telling you right now, right. That's rock bottom.
I think it was Logic the rapper, so he's not really hurting for money. So he turned around and bought it for $250,000. It's a crazy. I guess sports cards took off. It makes sense that this is like the 10 years younger. There's people in their 30s. This is probably what they grew up with, and now they're going back to, you know, now that they have money, they can go back and buy the things that they wish they had when they were kids. And I guess that's.
Do you guys remember the Pokemon thing when everybody was running across the street trying to find the?
Yeah, that's the yeah. That's what really started this thing, right? Okay. This year is the 25th anniversary. This is how deep I went into this. This is the 25th year of Pokemon's introduction. And then that game is what sparked a lot more interest from the masses, and then I guess COVID got a lot of people like these celebrities into the opening these packs and these old boxes. And then it just similar to the sports cards craze for a bunch of people. And then this market turned into from, you know, that Charizard card went from nothing to $250,000.
I heard Charizard had COVID and he's on a ventilator right now. So the value of the card's going up as we speak.
That's right.
Pokemon tears his ACL. The market's going to crash.
Yeah.
When I collected baseball cards, I used to buy these packs, Topps and Fleer and Donruss and all that I would intend. Like, I'm not even going to open it. I'm just going to keep it like this, especially if there was a star showing through the pack, that pack sealed. Like, you know, that's going to be more valuable. I opened every last one of those things within a week. Like,
it was so worth it.
I could never be the good kind of collector that just sits there and, yep, I'm not going to play with that action figure. Hell no.
I'm stick of gum that lasted for 5 seconds, there's nothing better.
The willpower it would take to not open a pack of cards.
Impossible.
Right. Right, like there's a Mattingly on top. There's bound to be.
Yeah, maybe there's 15 in there. They made a mistake.
Right. what's your favorite baseball card? I have mine.
My favorite baseball card that I own because I was an idiot is a Mark McGwire rookie card, Donruss rookie card.
Okay.
Because I collected the Bash Brothers because I knew both those guys were going to be Hall of Famers. They would both be still relevant some 30 years later, but just not exactly how I had hoped between steroids and then Canseco just kind of went crazy.
So me as a kid, for some reason, I love the Willie McCovey card because you flipped it over and you saw he just smashed it. He was like 45, 50 homers a year or whatever, and he had the great stance. And my favorite basketball ever was George Gervin because he had like 4 68-point games. And I was like, how are these guys doing this stuff, man? You know, they give the stats in the back. So that was my.
You couldn't just look that stuff up on the internet. Like,
mine's right here.
Yeah, exactly.
Can you see that?
Hey, fellas, I got to hop to go do kid pickup. But, Phony, thank you for having me.
Yeah, we're done.
Hey, thanks for coming back, Chris, man.
Love seeing you guys. T-Dub, Fresh, Mark. Love you guys. Next time. Good. Talk to you soon.
Boy.
You safe. All right, guys. Bye. I think we're done.
And fakes the pass and sends it down with a tomahawk slam.
Jerome off the glass. Count it. And one. Jim Jerome.